Session number 12707, Captain Frank Brewis, Reel 22.
Captain HCF Brewis, Reel 22. You'll be having men going out to the continent as well as coming back from the continent, had you, Captain?
Oh yes. Oh, and that reminds me about my arrival in Dover. One or two things. It wasn't a very auspicious arrival. And it's connected with that. I'd come down from Liverpool Street, was it? On a BLA leave train. So they didn't seem to know at Dover that I was coming down to, you know, for duty there. And the first fella that I met, and I had a mountain of kit with me. It was all the stuff I'd accumulated, all you know. And that was the RTO. And he said, how the hell do you expect to get that across to France? I said, I'm not going to France, I'm coming to work here. He says, can't you get out of it? Nobody's seen you yet. So I said, where do I report? And he said, well, with all this lot, he says, get out under the open quay and go down to the big arch to go in there by the customs office, not the admin office down there. So I get out under the quay and I get mixed up with a batch of demob lot coming on coming ashore, and I get carried along by this crowd into the customs hall. And a very energetic customs officer is wanting me to unpack the whole of this lot that I've got with me. And he thought it was a ploy that I was going to be on the staff there. However, somebody on the quay, on the staff, came and said, what's the matter? What's all this about? I said, he didn't believe me that I'm coming here, I'm reporting here for duty. And this, as you suggest, it was a two-way traffic. There were the people coming back on release, and of course there were people who had been on UK leave and were reporting back to their units. There was also a bit of rotating of units from Home Service to BLA. The Italian women got themselves away without any problems. We had one distinguished visitor. Oh, what the heck was his name? French general. Gamelin? General Gamelin? He'd obviously been wounded First or Second War. His right arm was useless, so he saluted with his left. Marine band and guard of honour for him out on the quay. That relieved the monotony a bit. I was now in charge of the lost property store. And somebody, on some occasion, among other things he'd lost, had lost a dirty great big Dutch cheese. But that didn't stay in the lost property office all that long. it was beginning to stink the place out, so it went over the side into the dock.
Did you have any problems with people coming back who were over-exuberant, you know, were on board ship, and at the time that they were coming ashore, were you any problems of that nature? After all, some of them had been away for a long, long time.
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, there were... I don't think that they'd had much opportunity to imbibe the sauce all that much before coming back. There were problem cases of awkward beggars who either because their luggage wasn't properly labelled or they'd had too much and hadn't been able to keep an eye on it all, who got a bit awkward with anybody with less than a crown on their shoulders, and they weren't going to move from the port until it was found. Well, it'll be, you know, it'll be on the next vessel, sure to be. Generally, it wasn't. There were also the people who, one in particular, I think he was either going to start a shop or a pub. Customs officer called me in one day to look in their store, and he said, look at this lot. And the floor was covered with crates and bottles. I don't know how the heck he got it on board the ship in the first place. But they were holding it. The bloke, he hadn't the cash with him, but he wasn't trying to smuggle it through it. He declared it, or the most of it anyway. And they were holding it for him till he could pay for it. There was the odd, awkward customer. One of these who was a bit bulshy and throwing his weight around.
Were there tragic cases? People coming back with illnesses or injuries?
Not that I saw. I have a feeling that these people were being flown back. No, my recollection is of all able-bodied. I was saying the odd, awkward customer who swore blind that he had nothing to declare, and then customs bods have got an eye for people like that. No, he had nothing. But he had a couple of cameras in his dirty washing when they made him open up. And then he changed his tune.
Where were you billeted at this time?
Oh, at the outset, I was at 64 Transit Camp up at the Castle, Castle Park Barracks, with strict orders that I could only stay there for 5 days. And I'd have to get myself out, and I was told I had to get civvy digs, and there would be a quartering allowance for that. Well, on some of the days in that first week, where I was starting later in the day and working on into the night, I was scouring Dover. Eventually, I found a place on the Folkestone, well, I say Folkestone Road, but it was still in Dover, the road leading out of Dover to Folkestone. 3 guineas a week, all found.
And this was presumably the civilian house?
Yeah. One or two naval bods. And some contractors, people I think, that were on a job in the inner docks. The inner docks tells its own story. Got friendly with the skipper of a minesweeper. And I was on board one day when there was a heck of a racket started away. They were all BIMs, minesweepers, BYMS, Brooklyn Yard, Yankee ones, wooden, against the magnetic mines, Brooklyn Yard minesweepers. And I don't know what the heck they were celebrating further over in the dock, but one went on fire. God knows what they were doing. And the ammunition started flying around in the fire. However, this boat and the crew on this one thought it was a good excuse for opening another bottle. With all this conflagration going on and ammunition flying around the area. And the other thing, I said more of this later, the OC troops on board the cross-channel ships, being all ex-prisoners of war, they had a good duty-free allowance on board ship, and they had an awful lot of back pay. So it got to be a bit of a tricky time, because quite often when I had occasion to go on board still, now and again, stay in, let's crack a bottle. We've nothing special on, have we? We're not sailing till such and such a time. And one of them had a pass, and he was leaving, he was going off, and he was giving me one of these passes for the dockyard policeman on the gate, you know, which said that so-and-so's baggage has been examined by customs, needs no further examination. There was one of them, an old Scotsman, well, actually got married while we were there, Andrew English. He was ex-POW, little tubby fella, and he wore one of those rather nice, I loved them, the leather sleeveless jerkins, what people call body warmers now. Khaki wool inside and leather outside. And I had an office with two doors, the main one in from the customs hall and the other one out under the open quay. And Andrew came to this quayside door on one morning, looking a bit tubbier than usual. And he was a bit strapped for cash, I think. And he said, "Frank, could you do with these for a fiver?" And one was a bottle of champagne, the other was a bottle of Trembley, I think. Readily accepted. And I'd only just got them into the office safe when a customs officer's head popped round the inner door and made some footling inquiry. I think 2 minutes earlier, and he'd have seen the exchange taking place. I think he'd realised that he'd seen Andrew coming ashore, looking a little stouter than usual, and suspected there was something hidden. Got away with it anyway. For a while.
Were they pretty strict to returning soldiers, the customs people?
On the whole, yes. They went through the motions of stopping 1 in 10 or something like that, who had, or anybody that had excess baggage, they might ask them to open up and bother a great deal with body searches, the odd one or two.
Was this resented?
Well, if they were trying to fetch something in, yes, but if they thought that it was, they were going to be held up and have to wait for the next troop train, then that caused resentment. But they pushed them through, you know, pretty quickly. Came Christmas that year, the other ranks lived in appalling quarters on the, towards the seaward, out towards the end of the Admiralty Pier jetty, which was the down channel side, the west side of Dover Harbour. And the quarters were built against the main jetty wall. And we eventually got them moved up to Archcliffe Barracks, which was up on a cliff. There was an amazing lift to what were known as shaft barracks. There was a shaft up through the cliff. An enormous thing. And the Archcliffe Barracks, they were sort of thing that one has seen in films about the Crimean War. And, you know, the units starting off from Aldershot, round a courtyard, two-storey, with iron, fancy iron work and pillars, round the veranda, round the courtyard. Well, they were sort of Crimean War date, these ones, I think, but it was paradise compared to where they'd been on Admiralty Pier. And of course, when it came to Christmas, the officers went up and served the Christmas dinner. And when we'd done that, we handed in officers' mess. We only met at work, or occasionally at a pub in Dover outside. But and then we all sat down with the bods and had our Christmas meal up at the barracks. Boxing Day, we were invited on board a Belgian boat to have a Boxing Day Christmas dinner with the captain and the officers on board. What was she called? I think it was the Princess Astrid. And then the sequel to that, she was going off the run. She was being handed back to the Belgian State Railways that night. So there was a bit of a boozy party went on board there, and the chief mate, the first officer, he ran out of booze. So I said, hang on a minute, I've got a couple of bottles. Got some funny looks from the military policeman on the bottom of the gangway. However, got these two bottles, and we got rid of the champagne, and we're literally just going to start on the drambuie when a head popped round the door and said to chief mate that the gangplank was going up in 5 minutes. So we was, no. Well, I think we had about that much off the top of the drambuie, and then the head popped round the door and said, the gangplank is going up now. So my drambuie went off to Belgium with them. There was a scatter to get down the gangplank. Can't think of any other. The other thing that happened that Christmas. Can't remember which vessel it was. We had two Isle of Man steam packets on the run that had been requisitioned. The Ben McCree and the Lady of Man, and we had a Southern Railways boat as well. I think it was called the Daffodil. I think it was the Ben McCree. They'd done what they hoped would be their last Cali Dover run. Incidentally, it was all Cali Dover. It wasn't Dover or Ostend or anything. It was the short cross on all the ships. On a Christmas Eve. And there weren't going to be any on Christmas Day. at that stage, there did turn out to be one eventually. There'd been such a rumpus on the far side about folks being held up in a transit camp because other folks wanted their Christmas day off. But the crew on the Ben McCree were hoping they would be this side for Christmas, and just accidentally they got a hawser wrapped round a propeller. And I knew the naval diver they called in, Sammy. Well, he's just known as Sammy the Diver. Well, they tried to bribe him, always with booze and with cash, you know, and he said, that's as much as my life's worth. And then they sort of threatened what they would do to him if he got it unwrapped. And he did. And we waved them a soldier's farewell when the band went away to spend Christmas in Cali. We were hastily called away from that Christmas dinner, lunch, at the Archcliffe Barracks, because the duty officer down at the docks rang up and said there was a vessel coming in after all. Well, life progressed through the following months, the late winter. Some terrible storms, the worst thunderstorm I've ever known in Dover at the time, but there were some dreadful storms brewed up along the channel. There was one day when the Lady of Man came in, and it was a westerly gale blowing up the channel, and Admiralty Pier was the westernmost. Halfway was the Prince of Wales Pier, or a third of the way. That was where the old cross-channel ships used to come in stern first, and the Golden Arrow train ran straight onto the ship. That was not all that far away, about a third or a quarter of a third of the way across the harbour, and then the main part of the harbour right over to the eastern docks. While this westerly gale was blowing so hard, they wouldn't allow anybody out on the open quay except the pier workers who were going to handle the mooring horses. And they had safety lines attached to them. Well, he had about five goes to get that vessel in, because every time he cut the engines, and before they could get the mooring ropes fastened up, she was drifting out again, away towards this Prince of Wales Pier. And eventually took the bull by the horns and came in full steam ahead, and did manage to hold it, even although it was within the lee of the main buildings on the Admiralty Pier. That was about the only possible untoward incident that happened. Got reports from the OC troops about mines on occasion that they'd seen on the way over.
The war had just been over 9 months or whatever. Was there any notice, or did you notice yourself, any change in the civilian responses to the forces now that the danger is out the way and the army reverts to its original peacetime role of being a nuisance or what have you? I'm not regarded very highly by the civilian population.
Yeah. Well, of course, Dover had taken a monumental hammering from cross-channel shelling and bombing. Strangely enough, the buildings that seemed to have survived best were the pubs. There were a number on the road on the way up from the western docks into the town, and there were lots of buildings damaged beyond repair. There'd only been first aid repairs in Dover for the ones that could be the houses that could be made habitable again. But there were many buildings that were so badly damaged that eventually they'd have to be demolished. As regards troops, you see, there are a lot of troops passing through Dover, but they were never seen in the town. There was another railway station, Dover Priory, up in the town, but it was the other one was Dover Marine Station. So it was Western Docks, the quayside, the customs hall, station platform. So although there were thousands of troops going through Dover, they were never seen by the population of Dover. It was just the garrison troops at the castle, our bods, the civvies on the requisitioned cross-channel troop ships when they were tied up at this site. I wasn't all that long in Diggs. My only main contact was the landlady and her family in those early days. And then I did get a leave and came north, and I'd got a flat, and my wife came down and lived there. So there was contact with the owner of the flat, and her brother came on leave. He was a wing commander in the Air Force. A variety of barmen in a variety of the many pubs. I piled up with a fellow from Heaven. He was a wireless operator. He was a Sparks on one of the ships. And I didn't understand what he meant. I was walking up in the town to have lunch in the town with him one day. And he pointed to a slit in the window of one of the pubs. He said, "Right, I'll take you there tonight." I said, "What the heck's that mean?" "It just says old tonight. Old ale. You know, not drunk old ale before?" "Oh, well, you try it out tonight." Only trouble was he drank pints. And he was ready for the next one before I'd got a third of the way down this black treacly stuff, you know. Needed a knife and fork to get it down, nearly. Shopkeepers.
Were they cheerful, the civilians? Were they, obviously, it wouldn't be pleased the wars over, but...
Not many of them. There were a few, but not the majority, who would talk about the earlier days when life in Dover was pretty scary. But on the whole, they didn't need to talk about it. You could see it all around you. I should think I'm probably being unfair. There were more naval ratings on the loose in Dover than army and no air force as such. And they used to get a bit tanked up, but apart from setting this minesweeper on fire and ammunition exploding all around the docks, there weren't many.
With the end of the war now obviously well over and your demob coming up, were you beginning to feel frustrated that you were in this situation, stuck down there, doing this somewhat humdrum job?
Well, I suppose, yes. I had an idea by this time that it would be April. You know, they'd already published at least an outline of which release groups would when various release groups would be demobbed. I was already thinking ahead. I'd been in touch with Durham about resuming studies again. There had been, under a B release scheme, there had been talk earlier on of earlier release for people whose further education had been interrupted by the war. And I inquired about that, but it didn't come to anything. You seem to have had to have some fairly high academic award, some scholarship or something like that, to take advantage of that. But they said at the time that I could take finals without any further residence qualification. That was amended later in the end, and I was awarded a BA under war regulations without taking finals, on the strength of the first 2 years. The rest of the time, it was fairly routine stuff. But as I say, my wife was down. We'd made a number of friends among the staff there. I had reasonable social life then. And as it came on towards May, I of course had to cope with the release procedure for bods on the staff there. Then it came my turn, and on the 22nd of May, I had all the documentation signed by Colonel Turner and my hot little...